session number 9339, reel 14.
Mr. William Holbrook, Reel 14. Now, we discussed the effects of stress of the fighting and just basic fear and things like that. Yeah. Did you have many cases of suicide at all?
I don't think so.
What about desertion?
Oh, desertion, yes. Can't think of suicide, yes. One made a nasty case of desertion. I don't know if I mentioned his name or not.
It doesn't matter now, I don't think.
Well, his name was Roberts. And he's a guy I knew very, very well. He's a lander, they're all landers in the future, most of them. And I knew very, very well. And he's a fellow that would, you never hesitate to go in any raid or things like that. In fact, I remember the guy in front of the German lines in Dar, listen to their conversation and try to find how many men are entrenched, you know, by the number of people talking. That he come back there, he'd do that. Well, this fellow. He couldn't, if there's any French girl, behind the line, he'd get with her and go away and desert with her. You know, leave the front line and be away for, did he call her, 2 months. And he'd call, what has happened, 3 different times, Roberts. Now, I remember one, the last time, well, the time before last he got caught, he's put in the tent as a guard, we had a guard, and we let him out, you know, because he hadn't liked him. And he was some months, he got caught again in the south of France. Well, when did he get caught? He was tried court-martial and sentenced to death. Roberts was. And I mean, the morning, of course, he's all of the troops were angry about, you know, upset about, because they all liked him. Well, of course, the only thing that was in his fight was that a lot of the troops were that knew him had gone, had died, wounded, and away. So, I mean, most of them, after months, were all new. Anyway, he came, and I was at a place, which the place called Renning House, that's on the Ypres front, between Poppering and Ypres.
About what year would this be?
About 1917.
So you're into 17,
about 1917. And well, before then. And one morning we was out of rest. And we went in some old barns and everything else. And we got rest between the time up the line, at 4 days rest. And we called out one morning, early. In fact, I don't know what reason. Called out and got this. When we got out, there was Roberts. Sitting on a chair, and we had to go down, what's this? It's all wrong. And they picked out six men, and the General Potter, he read out the statement. He said, the man, I always remember his words, he said, the man you're going to watch has been sentenced to death. He said, but his father, he's not a coward, he's a very brave man. He said, but power beyond my powers, I can't do anything about it. And so he said the sentence had to be carried out. So that the brought 6 men, and they placed an envelope over Roberts' heart there, bandaged. He said, "Oh," and he said, "I don't want to. I put a bandage around his head." He said, "I don't want a bandage around my head. I'd sooner die with the British than the German." He said, and they pulled out 6 men, and he's executed. That's the only one I know. It upset the Lisbon too much.
So you saw this happen?
Oh, yes. The only thing, fellow told me once, he said, you're the only man I know which an execution that can talk about it. I said, well, I don't like to talk about it, because I wouldn't like these paid people to know. I don't think they ever knew. They thought he was killed in action. See, that's why.
What was the actual procedure of the execution? How was it organised?
Oh, he was born out in this meadow behind the this village, and the funny part about it, the villagers knew more about than we did. They knew, they say, Cameride Touay, and they're supposed to be kept secret. And he was brought out and he was put on a chair, or box chair, I think it was, and his envelope was pinched over his heart, white, something over his heart, and he bandaged, and Robert said, take that off, he said, I was going to die with the British, put it in the German, he said, and that leaves. Executed.
They shot him.
Yeah, shot him.
Was the death instantaneous?
Oh, yes.
And the mood of the troops was fairly...
Well, that's it, I mean, yes, because the only thing is that it didn't upset them much because they were new troops. See, troops moved so quickly, there's only anybody like myself that had been out a length of time. It was quite a number, of course. But they all spoke about it, and all, so, you know, didn't know what to think about it.
Do you remember any other desertions, possibly earlier, near 1915? Were there any desertions in 1915?
In desertions? There's always a few desertions. There's always somebody missing and that sort of thing, you know, but you don't know what happened to them. They'd away from you, don't know what... They disappeared and that was it.
It wasn't too serious a problem. Was it a serious problem?
No. No, considering the extent of violence and that sort of thing, it wasn't. Men seemed to stick it better, you know.
That brings us on to something I was going to ask about, the overall morale of the unit
good.
In 1915.
It was good. Never heard a thing. They only talked about the... Or so-and-so and so-and-so talked about that. But as the guards are thinking of desertions and that sort of thing, never spoken about, never mentioned. Fair to say, I'll get a bloody blighty one or what sort of thing. I was in the... It's near this part too. I was in the wrong one more, and the fellow named Alan. I'll get the other fellow's name. And they were shelling, and they were talking about getting... Yeah, you know, always talking about getting a blighty one and all that sort of thing. So, well, they get a nice little blighty or getting very awkward, that little common talk. And this particular time, they were shelling us, and the shell burst, and a damn great lump of shell, was a bit bigger than that, whizzing over, and caught the back of the trench near old Blythe, actually Blythe. His eyes were together, a village scar where he'd been in the scrap pre-war days in the street fight. He's a nice chap, yeah, he made him vicious, his scar down, right down his face. So his mate said, "What about this Patsy?" Peter, he said, "Oh, and he said, it's too bloody big for me," he said. But I didn't, self-inflicting, no, I don't.
Some people didn't look out, try and get shot deliberately, but, you know.
Oh, I don't think so. No, I don't think so.
So it was just a sort of hope, but
yes.
People didn't look
for
it.
Yes, yes. They looked forward to think that it might happen. They'd like it to happen. I used to think sometimes that it was a matter of law of averages. I thought, well, I said, after about the year or so, I said, well, I can't. I said this to myself, you know. I said, I can't go through this like this. I mean, sooner or later, I've got to get something going to happen. But the only thing I wanted was, well, I didn't want to get blind. I hate that, the thought of that, was that to get an accident where I was blind, lost my eyesight. I didn't want to watch anything else, but it worried me all the time. But when I did worry about it, of course.
How did you get on with the officers? Now, you've told us about some officers you liked, and you've told us about one officer that wasn't liked. How did you get on with the officers in 1915?
Well, they all treated the troops well. Yes, and I always found, too, that they used to say about these old school tie. But I can honestly say that the men that were university men or sons of wealthy people, they were the best leaders we had. They were, really.
Why?
They got a certain amount of spirit corps sort of thing. You know, they thought their regiment, they thought it this way. They wouldn't disgrace themselves or anything like that. They were the best. And another thing, they go where if the men are going to go, they go. It wouldn't seem to be, you know, hanging back and all that sort of thing in the trench, you tell them where to go. And...
You were mostly still officered by regulars, you said, in 1915, early 15.
Yes. All the senior officers were regulars. Lieutenants weren't, but the captains were. As we had, I mean,
were the lieutenants? Were they as good as the regulars?
Yes. Yes, they were good. They were good.
Was there any friction between in the whole unit between regulars and the new people? Because was there any friction at all, or any
only one. I was a serious one. I'll do that one. That was a fellow named... I was very friendly with this fellow named Grant. This was about this time. He came from Itchin in Hampshire. No, near the Hertfordshire, isn't it? Itchin. And his father was a... I often thought I'd like to go and see if they're still about. His father was a builder. And this Grant was a... about my age, might be a bit older, but, you know, something about that. And very small, and I'd say he must be more than about 5 feet or 4. And another fellow in my company, was a fellow named Podmore. He was a burly, bloated sort of a big head, you know. I never did like, he never liked me, and I didn't like him. I always felt like a put my fist in his face, one of the sort of things, you know. And he was always getting on the ground, the conscript. He said, you bloody conscript, and all that. Wherever he could, he insulted him. And he said, oh, I said, Grant was nice, young chap. And one day, he was in the Nissen hut, at rest, and we got a brazier, a congo, the brain cake, and there's about, it's one of these long distance huts, you know, something, some of those big ones were, about 30, 40 feet long, long. And this brazier was there, and the fellas were standing around it, about half a dozen of them standing around it, and the other fellas were scattered about the hut. And he started getting on to it, this young Grant was there near me. And he started getting on to him, grumbling, you know, bloody conscript and all that.
Was Podmore a regular then?
I think he must have been, I don't know. Or if it was not regular, he was a joined up volunteer early in the war. I don't think he was a regular.
So this would be after 1916 when conscription came in then?
Yes, yes. That's right time, you see. Well, he got me, I said, why don't you leave him alone? I said, get on some of your own size to him. You know, I didn't like Podmore, he didn't like me. he tried to. Mate helped me on one or two occasions with a half on the bayonet and a carving knife. Anyway, that's that part of the business. And he said to Grant, get on, bloody, you've got to get out. So I said, why don't you pick on some of your own sizes, leave them alone? So he said, what are you going to do with you? And I got a coffee pot on this cookie, a coffee bonnet coffee on top of this brazier, old French coffee pot, and a coffee in it. He picked that up. And he got it, okay, and showed it right on top of my head, the grouts, all the burning coffee. He ran down my neck, God bless, he burnt all that. And I was so mad with it, I hit him and knocked him the length of the Nissen hut, so he's the bigger than he was. And he scooted along the polished sort of floor. I chased after him. And I got him before he could get up, I got his head between my hand. I know how to kill him. The fellow pulled me off the other foot. I hitting his head on the bare boards, you see. And they pulled me off. Well, anyway. That fizzed out, I don't know what happened. I don't know what happened to him in the end. But some years after the war, a man broke into a garage at Southampton and to steal a car. And while there, the proprietor got up to the bottom of the thing, and this man attacked him and hit him on the head of the hand and killed him. Podmore. And they arrested him about 3 or 4 months afterwards. He hanged at Southampton.
But this was a rare case of...
Oh, yes.
So yes, mostly the other ranks got on well.
Yes,
there,
yes.
And there was
they all mixed together and did help one another and did things for one another and all that sort of thing. It's only an isolated case.
There wasn't much bullying for any other reason, was there?
No. Well, they wouldn't allow it. The others wouldn't allow it. Tell you a thing. See that?
Your finger.
My finger.
Yeah.
That's what I got hit in Podmore. It's never got straight. I hit him like that, and I can never do anything with it. So I must have hit him pretty hard. He stood like, and it's always been like that since. That's all those years, and can't do anything with it. But no, it didn't hurt me. No, there was nothing like that. They were very friendly and help one another.
Would you normally have special friends that you basically lived with in the trenches and outside? You know, or would you change friends? Would you have special? Pals.
You need, well, the only one did that. Those you knew before the war, I knew a fellow named Cannon. He was always with him. And this Cain and Ace, that one that told you got hit in the hip, you know, hit in the knee, and I dug out. Well, carrying on with him there, I was at Arras in 1917, and I was hit with a message from Bakers and Sovia down at Arras town in the middle of the day. What a lovely job that was, too. And going down, I got down there and creeping around out the trenches and that sort of thing. I got out in the open, I crept the side of the house in there and got this message to them. It was on the way back in the afternoon. And the only other person in the street was another soldier, a British soldier, coming down the other way. I got up to the line and he was coming down. So it was both, these houses, French houses, they've always got a cellar that leads up to the pavement, you know, right down there. So I'd been so used to that sort of thing, and I knew the first thing was to say, I was in one of those cellars. Quick, I mean, I was wide open for that. And going, I was creeping along, he's creeping along. And we stopped with him about 2 the old one. Cain and Aisley. Oh, I said, Cain, I said, you get there? I said, where you been to? All right. So he said, yes, I got home. He said, they put me in another regiment. He said, no, they put me in the Scots regiment. The Scots regiment in the end, and I didn't like that. I said, you're right now. He says, I've got another regiment now. I said, well, I'm not in the line. He said, I said, how's it getting pretty wounded? So I need to get home. That, he said. But this is 2 years after, I saw him creeping along. And it was only between that street and the main street in Harris.
How did you get on with the sergeants and NCOs?
Well, they were right, yes. Very few were... Well, they wouldn't be me because I was a regular soldier, but conscripts, no. And the other fellows, they were very decent. In my view, anyway. And the officers were too. If they were reported that they weren't decent to the men, ill-treated the men in some way, they should get out of it. In my view, they would anyway. There's nothing of that going on at all.
Did the officers, and to a lesser extent the sergeants, did they get better treated, better conditions in the front line than the men, would you think?
Oh, no. The only ones that did was officers. If there was any little dugout to get or little shelter, they'd have it. Well, of course, they had a certain amount of writing to do and little things like that to do. But no, the sergeant, they didn't.
What about food? Did they get better food? Or?
No, they got food they did. As I told you, when I was with the auditor, people were like scrounging stuff, and I could. They got better food than they had out of line.
So, would it be fair to say that they shared most of the conditions of service of the men?
They get a bottle of whiskey up now and again. Until they came up with their pack, or something. They seem drinking whiskey, but. Yeah, but I mean,
would they ever get drunk in the line?
No.
Did you never think? Sorry,
never seen anybody slightly inebriated. Not a person. I've seen the men. Some of them, one or two of the men, not the officers. No.
Did you ever think of trying to become a sergeant, especially in 1915 when it was largely new troops?
No, I don't know why it wasn't. I had this. I had this job in 1915. I didn't. No, I got out of lots of things because I'd been an orderly and I come through the war at that time. I looked at myself a little bit different. As you know, I don't know, I say superior anyway, but I had a different feeling, so did they. Any officer that came, nobody was new, he soon got to know me. You see, it's a feeling that you didn't get preferential treatment. At the same time, you were if they wanted to, they tell you in the news and you're more of a confident with them, that sort of thing.
Oh, but you didn't fancy becoming an actual sergeant?
No.
So you didn't want to be either?
I didn't want to be.
Was it ever offered, the promotion?
Yes, two or three times I did, but I didn't take it. I took a corporal in the end, but that was only through when I got to Germany.
Why was it you didn't want to be a sergeant, though?
No, I didn't. I didn't like to think that I was in charge of troops, you know, that I got to make them do something perhaps that I didn't want to do, I didn't do. I like to think I was with the troops. I enjoyed myself with the troops. It's funny saying that, isn't it? But I did. Whenever I was with the... And they were, of course, a London regiment, you know, they were like cops and very humorous. And they are hard. And you never get... If anything went wrong, they'd be on your side and that sort of thing. You know, they were great friends, great pals. So I never... Never entered my head at all. I was got the line back the line, didn't I? I was enjoying myself when I was out. But I tell you what they used to do. They give me jobs perhaps that other men didn't do because they didn't know. Perhaps I had board list jobs and things like that. Perhaps they do something where there was a little bit of initiative and they was considered they wouldn't go and pick a brother that just come out from France. But they knew me as being there for a long time. But I did get preferential treatment, I must admit that.
Did you ever go over the top at all during this period while you were at Kemmel?
The Kemmel? We didn't go over the Kemmel, not daytime. No.
Can you remember if anything special or untoward happened on Christmas Day, 1914?
No. I never saw any troops. I was in the Ypres salient. I never saw any... It was fairly quiet. Christmas Day, there wasn't much firing going on. And I could hear them singing in the German trenches, singing Christmas songs like Watch on the Rhine and Journey Overall and all that sort of stuff. They were singing in there. I can only say I never saw a single German in there on Christmas Day. Make the event, not one. And I was in the salient. So I don't know how they fit. It appears, I've read since, where they weren't regular soldiers. They were conscripted men or something. You know, the British troops were. They weren't... They weren't regulars.
Territorials.
Yeah, territorials and that. I never saw, I didn't see a single thing. All I know is that Christmas Day, we were seeing a tin of Canadian pork and beans and eating that McPherson did a cold. We had one each. Nice, cold, it was lovely. It was a real treat for us. And opened with the bayonet, and got nothing to open it with. And the pork and beans in those days used to be a tin of beans with a piece of fat pork, about an inch square in the top. And God, you dig it down. I mean, I don't like fat, but I got it nice and cold, and we dug it and dig it out there. Bam, it's made of, you can have knives and forks, and fingers and bam, that's all. And they had their Christmas dinner. And I did enjoy it, really.
Did you do any carol singing in your trenches? You say you heard the Germans. Was there any singing in...
No, we sang up to, you know, perhaps we'd sing hymns or something like that when they were singing, trying to down their voices, you know. But they sing louder then. They know we're doing it. You could hear them laughing. You could hear them laughing. But no, there's nothing. I saw nothing there. We saw... They sang Christmas carol, Christmas hymns and things like that, and they did that to...
Did you have any special Christmas celebrations when the next time you're out of the line after Christmas? I mean, so there was no Christmas dinner for you? Or
No, nothing.
Out of the line, I mean.
Nothing either. We came out of the line, it came on. Oh, nothing. No, we had after coming out of Christmas, we had, obviously in Kenmore, because we went to Kenmore for Christmas. No, we didn't have a thing. I can't even admit a Christmas point. A glass of beer, nothing. Oh, no. No, they were nice people there. I had a nice billet there.
What did you think of the Germans during 1914 and early 1915? How did you see them as enemies?
I think that we thought them as soldiers like ourselves. You know, they had no idea to think about being cruel to them or nothing like that. So no, they thought just as they were soldiers doing their job, and that was that. We used to. I remember seeing a picture about that time of where a German. Been cut out of a newspaper where the mother was saying it's important to kind of cartoon, so this is German. They got a kind of full picture and a cartoon in this paper, German paper. And the first one where she's saying goodbye to her husband, she's saying bye bye to Hans, just seeing he's off to the front. Next one is about a month later, she's saying goodbye to her eldest son. The husband got killed, and he came back, got killed. And the next one, third month, the next son saying goodbye to you, see. He went, and the third one, she was shedding tears over him and all that sort of music back, but I think he could survive. But I've never seen that. It's in German. But no, we didn't.
Did you believe any of the propaganda stories?
Yes. We used to send them over by plane and drop these pamphlets over the German lines. And of course, some used to flap them back to us. And we'd know they'd do all sorts of. One I mean was where they was. The bodies, the German bodies, were being boiled down and used as quartz fat for butter.
That was later in the war, though.
Yes, later in the war.
What about the stories that had been spread? Had you heard the stories in 1914 of what the Germans were supposed to have done in Belgium? You know.
Yes, we heard that.
Atrocity stories.
Yes, but we never saw anything like that. Did I see anything like that? I've got to think. Yes, the only part I saw, well, it wasn't cruel. The only part I saw was... When we went into some building, a village, they got over some of the doors was a black triangle. Not the village. So I said to some of the buildings, I said, "What have you got that over your door for, that black thing?" Oh, they said, "When the Germans came to us in 1914, they took all the men, what the thing is, and made them draw guns and all sorts, and killed a lot of them. And every man they killed, they put a black thing over the door." And that was there all the time. Well, I went there for 6 months after. It's still got the black on the door patch where the Belgians have put it on. But I saw no cruelty. The only thing I saw once was with ourselves. We were... This was Kemmel, right? All right? We were in the trench of Kemmel, just about Kemmel, and the German made an attack on us and got beaten back. The two men appeared over our parapet, two Germans, and somebody shouted out, "Kill them, kill them, they're killing our wounded in the trail," he was said. And of course, immediately they shot out and fired on these fellows. I think they wanted to give themselves up. I think the way they would come, they tried to find, I think they're going to walk out the back and give themselves up. But that's what somebody shouted out, and within a second, of course, they opened fire on them. And one got away, one cleared over the top, the other one fell down the parapet. And sometime after, there's a fellow sitting on his body, you know, he's eating some. I think he got biscuits or something. I don't know. The Germans like this. And he's sitting on there eating some in the trenches and took notice of him. And some fellow said, "Here, Jack," he said, "that fellow's moving under you." He said, "He's not dead." The German, "Not dead." He said, "No, sir." And the poor devil's alive, afraid to move. And he'd been wounded. And like all that time, while they're sitting on his food. So they got him up and bandaged him up and put him sitting there alive. But that's the only time I named anybody that fired prisoners.
So you didn't have that much personal hatred of the
Germans? No, no. No, I can honestly say no. I can't remember the whole world. Not then anyway, the beginning was not the thing.
Not and the you thing. Saw them as reasonably fair opponents?
Yes.
Or
yes.
As fair as you were,
yes,
anyway?
Yes, that's right, yes. Well, firing and that sort, they take advantage of any chance offered itself. Of course they would, but I mean, I think they were very fair. I don't think like the last war.
What can you remember of this attack you mentioned, of the Germans attacked you over the top at Kemmel? What can you remember of that?
Well, all we know is that they shells were shrapnel first, because not in every shun fire, they wanted to do heavy shells, but not much, and then they attacked, and because we basically died from that machine gun fire.
Was that, now this is, you can make a comparison here between the new battalion and the regulars. Was the fire, you know, the rifle fire of the battalion of the 4th in 1915 at Kemmel, was it as good as it had been at Mons?
No, we couldn't expect it, could you really? They hadn't had the training, so they'd only been out. So, well, one fellow told me about that he was crying, this chap was. And I said, how long have you been out, a new man? He said, I've only just come out. He said, about 2 days ago, to join my battalion. So I said, when did you join? He said, I've only been trained. He said, 7 weeks. He said, I've only been in the army 7 weeks. I said, 7 weeks? And I said, you're out here. So he said, yes. He was crying.
So the rate of fire and the accuracy of the fire was much worse.
Oh, much slower. See, these regulars have been trained to fire 15 rounds a minute.
So your own personal shooting would be noticeably faster than everybody next to you?
Yes, yes, yes.
Would that attract comment from any of the new recruits?
No, they knew you were regulars and they expected, they looked up to you, really.
Would they ask for help in improving their own rate of fire? Would they ask you for advice?
No, I don't think so. No, I think they might ask for size, identity, although they'd look upon you as being a bit superior in knowledge of warfare and that sort of thing, especially if you've been out a year or so, they'd really more or less admired you and would do as you said, especially say, oh, don't go there, Jack, you might be under range of fire and that sort of thing. And
This attack by the Germans, was it a fairly large attack or was it just a sort of small local attack?
That time, no small attacks. It wasn't until the biggest attack we had before then was the crossing guard at Ypres. That was a big attack. But after that, I never saw them. They never put it in front of us. But up to the Battle of the Somme, we never had any attacks like they did at Ypres.
So you never had another mass attack?
No.